Good morning and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle producing, and signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Beautiful day in our state. In the COVID age, the governor of Louisiana, of course, is trying to calm the masses, and who knows, we may get to phase two soon. But right now, if you look at the streets and byways and highways across our state, there's much more action than there was, and we'll see if we have a spike in the cases of COVID-19. Let's hope if we do, it's minimal, because we all want things to get back to normal. And one of those who's followed many trials and tribulations of our great state since the mid-70s is Foster L. Campbell, Jr., joining us, the Public Service Commissioner since 2003. Foster Campbell is one of the longest-serving continuous public officials in the United States. He was elected in 1975 to the Louisiana Senate at the age of 28, and he is still going all these years later, 45 of them, and is running for re-election. But he's here, as always, to talk about various matters, and if you have something on your mind, 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number, and talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. And Foster Campbell, you're old enough, as am I, to remember the reign of one John Julian McKithen as governor of Louisiana. He was the first two-term consecutive governor in modern time. He would be 102 years old today if he had lived and born in the tiny hamlet of Columbia, Louisiana. And for a town that has fewer than 1,000 people, it's produced its share of notable people, including Buddy Caldwell and J.D. DeBlue, John McKithen, Fox McKithen, Clay Parker, former pitcher in the majors, Chet Traylor, Louisiana Supreme Court Justice. You know that town well, and you knew Big John, I suspect.
Yeah, I came after he did, of course, but I knew him, and I knew Fox well. And by the way, I was in Columbia day before yesterday. They have a unique pawn shop there, or a gun shop. It's called the Spotted Dog. It's right out there on the highway, Gawky, going to Monroe. And everybody goes there. It's a thriving business with lots of shotguns and fishing reels and everything you want. But Columbia is a unique little town. And Fox McKithen was my dear friend. He was a good guy. I liked Fox. And we had a lot of good times. Fox was a guy that what I appreciated about Fox McKithen was that he'd tell you the truth. If Fox told you something, it would be that way. And a lot of times you see politicians today that really don't want to just tell you something and stick with it. But I never had that problem with Fox. When he told you something, that's you didn't have to go check behind him. He'd always do what he said he would do.
He died 15 years ago, July 16th. Hard to believe it was 2005 when Walter Fox McKithen died after being paralyzed from a fall at his home here in Baton Rouge. And he died much too young, born in 1946. So do the math. He was short of 60 years old when he died. And his father was in his early 80s when he died, 81. And I recall Big John McKithen, the governor, by the way, the last governor of Louisiana to be above 6 feet tall. We've got one now who's pretty close, but not quite. But Big John was well over 6 feet tall. He was big in every way. And he said that once at a I remember Foster Campbell, he said that he was at a national governor's conference, and he was lectured by the governor of Minnesota about race relations in Louisiana. And he said, "Sir, your day will come." And look at the front page today over what happened, this senseless, tragic, and evil killing of a person who was, of course, murdered by a police officer. It is a tragedy, and it shows that these kinds of things can happen in places like Minneapolis in addition to spots in Louisiana.
Yeah, you're talking, and I guess that was Hubert Humphrey giving him the speech. But you'll know this for sure, but not everybody knows that Hubert Humphrey went to LSU.
He did. School. Class of 1940, political science.
He went to LSU. I have some friends in Minnesota, and none of them know that, and I'm always glad to tell them that. I said, well, we had some ties to Hubert Humphrey because he's one of the graduates of LSU. He was also a good friend of Camille Gravel. And a lot of other people down here in Louisiana, and Hubert Humphrey I think they call him the happy warrior. He always seems to have a smile on, on his face. Nothing's happy anymore about politics. It seems like everybody's turned against everybody, and it's sort of vicious. And that's a shame, because we can disagree without screaming and hollering, you know, and have some civil discourse. That's what I miss. I think they're missing in the legislature today. When I first got in the legislature, we had one Republican. His name was Edwards Barham from up in Oak Ridge, Louisiana. He was a gentleman, and he got along with everybody. He was a conservative, of course, but I never will forget he and Edwin Edwards hit it off right off the bat. And Edwards Barham and Edwin Edwards were good friends. They liked to hunt together. Edwards, both of them were big hunters. But Edwards Barham was probably one of the smartest men I ever served with. He was a total gentleman, and he hit the ground running. When he came to the legislature, he sat right in front of me, but he handled some of the most sophisticated bills in the legislature as a freshman.
Well, you mentioned Hubert Humphrey, and a listener, we do have the most enlightened audience in radio, notes that yesterday was the 109th anniversary of the birth of Hubert Horatio Humphrey. And Hubert Humphrey in 1968 lost to Richard Nixon for the presidency. Nixon had 31,783,000 votes. Humphrey had 31,272,000 votes. So a gap of about 511 or 12,000 votes separated Nixon over Humphrey, a much closer race than in 2016, when Hillary Clinton in the vote routed Donald Trump, beating him by almost 2.9 million votes. And Foster Campbell, that brings us to a question from one of our erudite listeners about the Electoral College. You're a student of American politics. What do you think about the Electoral College? Has it gone past its usefulness?
Probably, but if you just went on popular vote, we don't have many votes in Louisiana. We do have some electoral votes, and I think this. Now you're the political science person. But I think that the Electoral College is sort of weighted where everybody has a voice.
Well, it's weighted for smaller states, and that would include Louisiana. But right, it's also, the way things are now, weighted towards so-called swing states, where it's not determined whether the Democrat or Republican will win. And we know now, from here till the end of our time, that a Republican will carry Louisiana every time. So Donald Trump won't be visiting Louisiana, and Joe Biden won't be visiting Louisiana, because it's a cinch for Trump. And just, they won't even be in California, for God's sakes, which has one-eighth of the American population. So the Electoral College obviously has some deficiencies. Mike in Villa Del Rey, you're on with Foster Campbell. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. And I'd like to ask Mr. Campbell, I guess, give us all some advice here. You said all these folks, different ideologies, got along and they were friendly. And these days, I find that if you talk to someone that, you know, is a big Trump supporter, that you can show them facts. You can, I mean, it's been on this show, I've heard it. And it's either fake news or they don't believe it. And you just can't hold a discussion like that. I'll listen for your answer.
Thank you, Mike. Foster, Commissioner Campbell.
Well, it's a shame. It's a shame because there's an old saying, there's no wrong way to do the right thing. And everybody knows what's right and wrong. And if people don't tell the truth, and the people that support that candidate ought to fess up to it. I mean, it can't all be lies on both sides. If the Democrat tells something that's not the truth, Democrats ought to say that's not true. And but if we keep telling, if you all this stuff about fake news, then nobody believes anything that the news media says, and that's not good, because we have to have a news media to break the news for us. Because
All right. We do want to get to as many of you as possible, and we got folks lined up. Be patient if you're trying to get in. Henry at the Country Club, you're on with Foster Campbell. Hi, Henry.
Hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Mr. Foster. You know, you're talking about days gone by. Well, nowadays, you call up any political office and ask for help, the first thing they're going to ask you is, well, do you live in our district? Anybody can call up Foster Campbell's office, and what do they say? They don't ask you where you live. They say, what can we do to help you?
All right, and you've always been big on constituent services. It's good for a public official to be that way, but at Foster Campbell, I think you would acknowledge it's good politics, too. We're going to spend some more time with Foster L. Campbell, Jr., 877-217-5757. Public Service Commissioner since 2003. He unseated Don Owen in the year of 2002 in a race for the ages and a state lawmaker for 27 years. We're back after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. We're continuing our visit with Foster Campbell. A bit later in the hour, Mark Ballard of The Advocate. In the U.S. now, there are 102,205 people dead from coronavirus, lost souls who in some cases were taken much too young, and others who would have lived many more years had they not succumbed to COVID-19. Louisiana has 2,617 deaths, so we're now at 2.5% of the U.S. number, which is above our population. But considering how it started, with Louisiana being right at the top, it's been a dramatic drop in our state from people who have succumbed to this illness, which we know, a virus that is quite deadly. The U.S., with its 102,205 deaths, has 26% of the world total, and our country has 4.3% of the world population. Foster Campbell, how has this affected business with the Public Service Commission?
Well, it's we are doing a lot of work by our computer. Everybody has a computer at home, so when people call, we're able to help them with it. We don't have a lot of people who come by our offices in Monroe or in Shreveport, but most people call us and or contact us by email or whatever. So I don't think it's drastically hurt our service up here. But it would be nice to see that our people come back to work, and I'm going to ask them all to come back to work Monday. We've been off, and we wear masks, and we're doing everything possible. And I just want to say I think Governor Edwards has done a good job doing the best he can do. Evidently, our cases are going down. I think he's done everything he could do to help. And I think people as a whole have really looked at this situation, how serious it is. I've had several friends of mine who died. I had a lady that died in Ringgold last weekend, and I know it's serious, and everybody ought to take it serious, especially people. I'm 70 years old, 73 years old. I'm very conscious of it, and the more that we think about it, the more we protect ourselves, the better off we are.
Well, a listener asks about you, of course. You just noted you're 73. You're a year younger than the President of the United States, who's 74, and he's out there and about. You're out there and about. And you quite possibly would have spent much of your career on Capitol Hill had you won a race in 1988, which I think you lost by fewer than 1,000 votes to Jim McCreary to succeed Buddy Romer in Congress. And you were almost killed in a car accident. And because of that, is one who has faced something like that, not quite as serious as yours, but pretty close. You have issues that at 73, I'm sure you're reminded of that accident every day of your life. You lost an eye. How has that affected you and your life since then? We're talking now, hard to believe, 32 years. How has that affected you?
It makes you deal with tragedies. It was a terrible situation. I was in a runoff. And I had a wreck on a road that I shouldn't have been on, that everybody was using, but no excuse. I was on my way to meet Buddy Romer at 7 o'clock at the mansion with Senator Don Kelly, and I was a little late, so I got on I-49 to make up some time, and there was a big hole in the road, and I hit the hole. There was no no barricade signs up there or anything else. And they had three other wrecks in the same hole the same day before they ever put up a barricade. But anyway, I was the one that made the news. The other wrecks didn't make the news. Anyway, my fault. I had a wreck, lost my eye, nearly lost my life. But I rebounded, and I understand people losing things. But if you got the will to fight, you come back. I hate to say this. I mean, I don't take it lightly. I never think about losing my eye. I know I don't have a right eye, but I farm, and I pull 32-foot gooseneck trailers right through Dallas, Texas, full of cattle. So, I mean, I just have to watch what I'm doing. But I think when people have problems in their lives, or if it's wrecks or sicknesses, makes them stronger. And it made me more determined. I didn't want to get out of politics. I've loved politics. It's been a great life. I've been in it since I'm 28 years old. I've helped people a lot, and I'm glad to do that. I've brought up a lot of issues that I think are important, consumer-type issues, payday loan companies. I think they charge way, way too much money, and I was able to say that, and I think a lot of people believe that. Jailhouse phones, that when people are incarcerated, there are people who charge astronomical fees for people incarcerated to talk to their loved ones on the outside. It doesn't cost the prisoners anything. It costs the people on the outside who would like to talk to them if they have children or their grandmother or whatever. It's almost impossible to communicate. Things like that, I've been able to help on consumer issues, putting the rural electric co-ops back under the Public Service Commission. Right?
All right. Now, I've got some listeners waiting, and I've got some who have also asked questions. And one, I'm pulling up the story. A payday lender spent $1 million at a Trump resort not so long ago and cashed in. The president has become a big defender of the payday lending industry. It held its national convention, by the way, at the Trump Doral Hotel outside Miami. And as we know, payday loans are such that they typically charge 400% on an annual basis. And the president is defending that, saying it's a good, honest industry. You look at it differently, Foster Campbell.
I certainly do. I think it's sinful to anybody to pay that kind of interest. I don't ever preach, but the Bible's full of stuff about usury. I found one incident outside of Fort Polk in Vernon Parish where the interest rate was 600-something%. It's not good. You see payday loan companies in the poor part of town. You don't see them up and down Highland Avenue in Baton Rouge, or you don't see them up and down Line Avenue in Shreveport in the wealthy parts of town. They go to the poor parts of town. They take advantage of the poorest people, and they charge them astronomical amounts of interest. And it's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. And some states have kicked them out of the state. And they ought to do that in Louisiana. All right. Or make them charge something that's reasonable.
A listener wanted me to ask you this, and I promised I would, and it is relevant. You know, and the lawmakers now, they're wearing masks at the Capitol, and it's a dangerous place for a different way. But when you took office in 1976, that place was like an armed fortress because it was thought that there was a war going on between labor and others, and What happened in 1976 to make the Capitol such a dangerous place?
Yeah, you're right. That was the day about right to work. I never will forget that. I just got out of teaching school at Halton High School, and all of a sudden I was in a place where they had all the state policemen around the Capitol because we voted on to repeal right to work in Louisiana. It was repealed, but it was very emotional. And as you remember, advertising executive from Shreveport was shot in the middle of this controversial political situation, Jim Leslie, and they tried to blame that on Victor Busey, who had nothing to do with it, but whoever figured it out, it was a hell of a coup because everybody said, well, Jim Leslie is the guy who figured out how to repeal right to work, and then labor took it out on him, but that's not true. Victor Busey had nothing to do with Jim Leslie's death, and it came out later that it was somebody else that had
George D'Artois
passed to in Shreveport, that he tried to pay him with a public money, he wouldn't take it or something. I don't know what the controversy, but it had nothing to do with labor, but they did it at a time where everybody was pointing their finger at Victor Busey, and he absolutely had nothing to do with it. If you knew Victor Busey, like I got to know him, he was a gentleman. I never heard him raise his voice. And when he came to committees often to speak to the committees, he knew the subject matter well. And his wife was a nice lady. She still is. She lives in Baton Rouge. And Victor Busey was a firefighter, and he started out in Shreveport, Louisiana.
877-217-5757. We'll pause for the news. We're going to spend a bit more time with Foster Campbell, then turn it over to Mark Ballard of The Advocate. We'll begin with David in Atlanta when we come back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. Foster Campbell with us for a few more moments, the veteran lawmaker and public service commissioner, seeking a fourth term this year in office, and he also served, as we know, from 1976 to 2003 in the Louisiana Senate, the upper chamber, and started with Edwin Edwards and went through Dave Treen, and then Edwin Edwards again, and then Buddy Romer, and then after Buddy Romer, we had Edwin Edwards again, Mike Foster, and I guess Foster Campbell left just as Mike Foster was finishing his second term. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta, as promised. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana, and can you pull him up? I'm not sure which line he's on. There we go. Thank you, Matt. David, you're on with Foster Campbell.
Good morning, gentlemen. Commissioner Campbell, I have a lot of respect for you. You know, there was a representative for the White House on CNN the other day, and he was discussing the possibility that the White House may propose a capital gains tax holiday for at least 1 year. You know, billionaires like Carl Icahn, Trump's friend, would love it. It would skyrocket the deficit, and I don't know what it would do other than have more trickle-down economics for people right now who are out of work, their businesses have failed, and they barely can put food on the table.
All right. What about the president, who in his tax plan and, of course, in this initiative, if it were to happen, is obviously courting the base that supported him, the base that is, of course, the top 1% in this country, people earning over $1 million a year on the average. Foster Campbell, that's not your base, but if you were a Republican, you might be doing what the president's doing, would you?
I wouldn't. If I was a Republican, I wouldn't do it either. I have a problem when the country's broke and the state's broke, giving tax breaks at a time when we're broke. I mean, I understand giving tax breaks. We've cut taxes before, but usually you cut taxes when you're doing real well. But how could anybody talk about tax breaks in Louisiana now or in Washington now? I mean, that we need to make sure that what are we going to do about this deficit we've amassed in both places? And we got to have roads, and you got to have hospitals, and you got to have schools, and everybody seems to want a tax break at a time that we can't afford it, and it just doesn't make good business sense. It has a lot to do with greed. People see that we're in trouble, and they want to get in on the ride, and we ought to have the responsibility to say, no, look, we're going to do what we can, but we can't give any more money away at this particular time. We need to get everybody back on their feet. We need to pay some bills in the state and in the national government.
Dan downtown. Thank you, David. Dan, you're on with Foster Campbell. Hi, Dan. Are you there? All right. See if we can get Dan on the line. But before we do that, Foster, another listener, and it's something else that I promised we would ask you about. During the Jindal years, a lot of federal money for broadband expansion was not taken. It would have helped the folks in North Louisiana, but the governor thought it was a boondoggle and not worth the investment. You think otherwise. What's going on that front right now?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. We had a chance when Bobby Jindal was governor. Now, I know there's some people out there that like Bobby Jindal, but these are facts now. This is not fake news. This is real news. When Bobby Jindal was governor, Louisiana was awarded $80 million to help broadband in rural parts of Louisiana. Keep in mind that we are the poorest state in America, and up and down the Mississippi River, we have the poorest people living there in the United States of America, and in desperate need of high-speed internet. Bobby Jindal turned down $80 million gift. It wasn't a loan, it was a gift. And there was 212 gifts presented in the United States of America, and we were the only one that turned it down. But today we have some new programs coming out. One of them is called the Rural Digital Operating Fund. They're going to put $20 billion in it, and I'm doing everything I can, and everybody I know on the Public Service Commission is trying to get all the money we can to get rural high-speed internet to everyone, because it's like the telephones used to be. It's a teaching tool. You need it in small businesses. You need it in hospitals. You need it in law offices. You need it in banks. You need it in everybody, little hardware stores. Everybody needs it. And Louisiana needs it worse than anybody, because we have the poorest population in the United States, and we need to help raise our economic level. And there's no better way to do that than communication. So hopefully, this money that's coming, we can take it and utilize it. John Bel Edwards is trying to do that. He's a big fan of a high-speed internet, and I think everybody is. So,
all right, we're going to go to Dan downtown, and then we'll get to Mark Ballard. But Dan's been waiting for a while, and Dan, I think we have you now. You're on with Commissioner Campbell.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner, whatever happened to your old opponent, Jim McCreary? When he left Congress, did he stay in Washington making seven figures as a lobbyist?
Guess what? That is our problem in Louisiana. Not only did he stay up there, name me one of them, Billy Tozen, John Brough, Bennett Johnson, you name it, Bob Livingston, they all stay up there. They go to Washington, and they never come home. And they all make double-digit, 400,000 to 500,000 a year lobbying for some special interest. So it's amazing how these people, when they're in Congress, we need a bill in Congress that says, if you go to Congress, you come home, and you can't go back up there as a lobbyist. That can never pass, because those people up there wouldn't let it pass. But that's our biggest problem. Everybody that goes to Congress stays up there and makes a lots of money. Richard Baker, he's never came back home to Baker, Louisiana. He's up there in Washington making jillions of dollars.
Yeah, you said 400,000 or 500,000. These guys make millions of dollars. Millions.
Well, that's sick.
But on the other hand, don't they have the expertise that's necessary for these positions?
Does anybody think, and I'm talking about when someone of our folks that was up there gets a $7 million retirement check from a pharmaceutical company, you think that's normal? $7 million? What'd you do to get a $7 million retirement check?
Well,
you know, what do you do?
We had him on the air the other day. He actually got the pharmaceutical industry to cut a deal with Barack Obama, and as noted, Billy Tozen, he got hammered by both sides for that. The Democrats thought he caved in and helped the pharmaceutical industry, and the Republicans thought that he shouldn't have even dealt with Obama. That they didn't want to cut a deal, so he was caught in the middle. And he got a nice going away present.
Yeah, what he did, though, he didn't. You didn't ask him about cutting a deal with George Bush to bid out medicine for Medicare. You didn't talk about that. You should have asked him about that, because that's the deal he didn't cut.
Well, Bush was president before Tozen became head of pharma. But
Tozen was chairman of the Commerce Committee.
He was.
Where the deal was cut.
He was.
That's where he made the deal not to bid it out, when they held the voting machines open all night, and they got the votes they needed to make sure that Medicare couldn't be bid out. And Medicare, appeal at Medicare, as of 60 Minutes, they showed it, one pill at Medicare costs $1,500 a year, or whatever the medicine was. But with the VA, they bid it out. It was $150 a year. Mr. Tozan, they asked him that on 60 Minutes, and he couldn't answer the question. That's a $1,350 difference for people on a fixed income. So, I mean, yeah, they made him, he worked for Farmer, or whatever you call it. No wonder. What a hell of a deal.
Well, I'll say this for Foster Campbell. He and I go back a long way, and I remember when he was battling the co-ops many years ago, and the leader of the co-op said, you met at a, you actually agreed to meet with him, but the lunch was at a McDonald's, I've never talked to you about this, but he said he paid his meal and you paid your meal at the McDonald's.
Yeah, and I passed the rule at the Public Service Commission when I got there. They can't take us to lunch anymore. I know some people say it's no big deal, but it is a big deal. Everybody, they take you to Chris's and buy everything you want. Do that two or three times. The next time, you're easier to meet with them or give you tickets to ball games. And then the next time, you're voting with them on something that's against the people's will.
Right.
Too much of that goes on.
Foster Campbell, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, and let's keep it going.
I know that you like statistics. Victor Busey's sister was the first woman CPA in Louisiana.
Really? Well, Victor Busey was a great man, and you're right.
Nice
he was vilified as a labor henchman who was out hurting people, but he was a kind man, very kind man.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And he was a neighbor of Bobby Jindal for many years. Jindal grew up down the street from him.